full of vitamins, nutrition, and integrative medicine. He warns against the fallacy of going GMO-free and takes the radical position that dichlorodiphenyltrichloroethane, DDT, is harmless. He bitterly demonizes Rachel Carson for killing millions of people by hatching the plot against Monsanto's DDT. Dr. Offit counsels his fellow PIs that lying is part of their job. He justifies any whopper that maximizes vaccine uptake. In 2017, Offit coached a group of fellow PIs, "You can never really say that MMR doesn't cause autism, but frankly, when you get in front of the media, you better get used to saying it, because otherwise people hear a door being left open when a door shouldn't be left open." In his 2008 book, Autism's False Prophets, Offit fabricated a conversation claiming that a vaccine safety advocate, J.B. Handley, a prominent Portland, Oregon businessman with a severely autistic son, threatened one of Offit's acolytes. Handley sued Offit for libel, forcing him to retract the statement, to publicly apologize for the fabrication, and to make a humiliating $5,000 donation to Jenny McCarthy's autism charity. Despite such embarrassments, the mainstream media treated Offit's most outlandish statements as gospel. Physicians rely upon the veracity of his pronouncements in making treatment decisions. Dr. Offit serves on the board of various pharma front groups and astroturf organizations and commands a vast network of bloggers and trolls, each of them directly or indirectly paid by the pharmaceutical companies to stifle debate, propagate lies, bully and intimidate the mothers of intellectually disabled children, silence scientific and medical dissent, and root out heresy. In 1998, Offit sat on the CDC's ACIP committee and participated in the debate that added rotavirus vaccine to the mandatory schedule for the first time. Neither from the debate nor the vote, despite the fact that he had his own rotavirus vaccine then in development. He voted that year to add Wyeth Arist Pharmaceuticals' rotavirus vaccine, RotaShield, to the mandatory schedule, despite the absence of functional safety studies. Offit knew that ACIP's positive vote on Wyeth's rotavirus jab would virtually guarantee a similar approval for his own rotavirus vaccine during an upcoming ACIP session. Before arriving at ACIP, every vaccine must first get reviewed by FDA's sister independent panel called VRBPAC, which is also populated with Dr. Fauci's and Big Pharma's PIs, then licensed as safe and effective by the FDA. According to the findings of that 2000 congressional investigation, four of the five FDA VRBPAC committee members who voted to license the Wyeth rotavirus vaccine that year had financial conflicts with the four pharmaceutical companies, Sanofi, Merck, Wyeth, and Glaxo, that were developing versions of the vaccine. Once the FDA committee gave RotaShield its blessing, the vaccine moved to ACIP to vie for a CDC recommendation, which effectively mandates the vaccine for 3.8 million schoolchildren annually, guaranteeing the manufacturer a trapped market worth hundreds of millions. During the 1998 ACIP session, Dr. Offit sat as one of five full voting members. There were five additional non-voting members. His Rotatec co-developer, Stanley Plotkin, also sat on the committee. The ACIP committee unanimously recommended Wyeth's RotaShield vaccine. The August 2000 congressional investigation found that the majority of ACIP members were conflicted in that vote. That report found that 7 out of 10 ACIP working group committee members who voted to approve the rotavirus vaccine in June 1998 had financial ties to the pharmaceutical companies that were developing different versions of the vaccine. According to the congressional report, the chairman served on Merck's Immunization Advisory Board. One member was under contract with the Merck Vaccine Division, received funds from various vaccine manufacturers, including Pasteur, now Sanofi, and was under contract as a principal investigator from SmithKline, now GSK. Another member of that same ACIP panel received a salary from Merck, as well as other payments from Merck. Another member was participating in vaccine studies with Merck, Wyeth, now Pfizer, and SmithKline, now GSK. Another member received grants from Merck and SmithKline, now GSK. Another member shared a patent on his own rotavirus vaccine, funded by a $350,000 grant for Merck to develop this vaccine, and was a paid consultant to Merck. The last of these bullet points referred to Paul, "I have no conflicts off it." Dr. Fauci's and Pharma's corrupt control of those two panels allowed Wyeth to obtain both an FDA license and a CDC recommendation without having to genuinely safety test this product, a process that would have revealed terrible risks. Even the truncated trials of Wyeth's RotaShield, conducted with no placebo, revealed serious side effects in babies, including failure to thrive, fevers high enough to cause brain injury, and a condition called intussusception, where a child's intestines telescope into themselves, causing an agonizing blockage that in some instances results in death. The intussusception figures alone were statistically significant, cited as 1 in 2,000 of the children who received the vaccine. At this time, there were around 3.8 million children in the target age group living in the United States. This translated to around 1,890 statistically likely cases of intussusception. Nevertheless, VRBPAC, under Fauci's and Pharma's tight control, approved the vaccine, and ACIP put it on the mandatory schedule. Less than a year after Dr. Offit and his confederates on ACIP voted to mandate RotaShield with no authentic safety testing, Offit again sat on the ACIP committee that revoked this earlier recommendation. ACIP pulled RotaShield from the market in October 1999 due to the many children who, predictably, suffered intussusception. VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, contains 50 reports of vaccine-related intussusception for the year 1999. Paul Offit's shrewd maneuvering through this sequence of events opened an unobstructed path to approval and enormous riches for his own rotavirus vaccine, RotaTeq. Since its approval, Dr. Offit's rotavirus vaccine has caused a wave of catastrophic illnesses and agonizing deaths in babies from intussusception. From 1985 to 1991, prior to the introduction of the rotavirus vaccine, the rotavirus disease caused only 20 to 60 deaths per year nationwide, mainly due to dehydration associated with diarrhea. Since dehydration is easily treated, virtually all deaths from rotavirus are avoidable with timely and appropriate medical care. Reported adverse reactions from Dr. Offit's RotaTeq vaccine range from 953 to 1,689 per year. These included fever, diarrhea, vomiting, irritability, intussusception, SIDS, severe combined immunodeficiency, otitis media, nasopharyngitis, bronchospasm, urinary tract infection, hematochezia, seizures, Kawasaki disease, bronchiolitis, urticaria, angioedema, gastroenteritis, pneumonia, and death. The best evidence indicates that Dr. Offit's rotavirus vaccine causes negative net public health impacts. In other words, Dr. Offit's vaccine almost certainly kills and injures more children in the United States than the rotavirus disease killed and injured prior to the vaccine's introduction. Finally, in 2010, after its introduction, NIH learned that Offit's vaccine, Rotatec, also contained the porcine retrovirus that causes an HIV-like syndrome called wasting disease in pigs. Neither Dr. Fauci nor any other agency has ever funded a study to establish the safety of injecting their dangerous pig retroviruses into babies. Millions of American children have now been inoculated with the virus, thanks to Offit. In 2006, ACIP added Offit's vaccine to the schedule, allowing Offit and his business partners to sell his patent rights for the formulation to Merck for $186 million. Offit made a declared profit of over $20 million as a result of this series of transactions. Offit reported in a gushing 2008 Newsweek story that the millions he made from his rotavirus caper was like winning the lottery. In a less adoring assessment of the scam, UPI journalist Dan Olmsted and co-author Mark Blacksill accused Offit of voting himself rich. The disturbing saga of Paul Offit and his rotavirus vaccine illustrates how Tony Fauci's PIs stuff the sausages at HHS. How PIs control public marketing. Dr. Fauci's choice to transfer virtually all of NIAID's budget to pharmaceutical PIs for drug development was an abdication of the agency's duty to find the source and eliminate the explosive epidemics of allergic and autoimmune disease that began under his watch around 1989. Refereed science, surveillance data, and manufacturers' inserts all implicate the very drugs and vaccines that Tony Fauci largely helped develop as culprits in those new epidemics. NIAID money effectively became a giant subsidy to the blossoming pharmaceutical industry to incubate a pipeline of profitable new drugs targeted to treat the symptoms of those very diseases. While NIH remains a massive funding source for PIs, rich contracts from big drug companies and royalty payments from drug products often dwarf their government funding. Pharma money is the PI's bread and butter, commanding their loyalties and dictating their priorities. They and their clinics and research institutions are, effectively, arms of the pharmaceutical industry. Their empires rely on pharma for their growth and survival. Moreover, PIs typically function in quasi-feudal fiefdoms, loyal to a single pharmaceutical company. Each drug company, Glaxo, Pfizer, Merck, Sanofi, Johnson & Johnson, and Gilead, cultivates a cadre of its own reliable PIs whom it funds to conduct clinical trials and drug research. Unwritten protocols dictate that a Merck PI will not customarily perform research for a Merck competitor. Typically, the drug company contracts with the reliable PI's medical school, attending hospital, or research institution to run clinical trials. The company makes payments ranging from a few hundred dollars to $10,000, depending on the trial phase, complexity, and the company, for each patient enrolled in the drug trial, with the university skimming one-half to two-thirds of those funds for academic overhead. Those payments from the pharmaceutical company secure long-term loyalty from the institution and its board. Moreover, both the researcher and the university customarily share patent interests in any product the PI helps develop, collecting rich royalties when it hits the market. Additional money from the pharma sponsor supports the PI's assistance and laboratory costs. The drug company also pays legalized bribes to the PI grantee through honoraria, expert witness fees, speaking gigs, and first-class travel to exclusive resorts for conferences. All these perquisites tend to fortify loyalty and incentivize the favorable research results necessary to securing FDA drug approvals. On all sides of these transactions, each stakeholder understands that positive reviews of the subject drug promise future work. According to Nussbaum, PIs do their own kind of science, and more often than not, their experiments have little to do with either health or the public. They test drugs by private pharmaceutical companies for personal gain, for money that goes to their universities, and for power. The system allows pharmaceutical companies to systematically divert federal monies, the initial NIAID grant, to serve their own private profit priorities. Naturally, the system is hostile to drugs with expired patents or those that emerge from companies that are not paying the PI's research expenses. This bias explains Dr. Fauci's signature animosity toward non-pharmaceutical, unpatentable, or patent-expired and generic remedies. In his unpublished history of the HIV era, Down the Rabbit Hole, author and historian Terry Michael offers a similar description of Dr. Fauci's abrogation of his scientific role to the army of pharma PIs. But NIH has other clients, including thousands of grant-seeking medical science PhDs produced by American universities after World War II. NIAID funds much of the pharmaceutical industry's research and clinical trials. In fact, Big Pharma has become a client of the NIH, and especially its NIAID. This powerful army, garrisoned at hospitals and universities in every large American community, allows pharma and Dr. Fauci to control the public health narrative around the country. Before I understood its structure, I encountered the pervasive power of the combination. Between 1990 and 2020, I served as president of an influential environmental group, Waterkeepers, with 350 affiliates around the country and the globe. Waterkeepers is the world's largest water protection group. I published regularly in the New York Times and all the major papers, Boston Globe, Houston Chronicle, Chicago Sun-Times, Los Angeles Times, Miami Herald, and San Francisco Chronicle, in magazines including Esquire, Rolling Stone, and The Atlantic, and in online publications, most often in HuffPost. I delivered over 220 speeches each year, including 60 paid speaking engagements to large audiences at universities and corporate events. I earned a substantial income from those appearances. All that changed in 2005, after I published an article, Deadly Immunity, about corruption in CDC's vaccine branch, simultaneously in Rolling Stone and Salon. Newspapers thereafter generally refused to publish my articles on vaccine safety and ultimately banned me from publishing on any issues. In 2008, without consulting me or citing a specific reason, Salon retracted and removed my 2005 article. Salon's founder, David Talbot, faulted Salon for caving in to pharma. Rolling Stone finally removed the article without explanation in February 2021, and HuffPost purged all half dozen of my vaccine articles. The editors of those online journals had thoroughly fact-checked my pieces prior to publication. They removed them without notice to me and without ever explaining their decisions. It was the beginning of the mass censorship of any vaccine information that departs from official narratives. That year, universities and corporate hosts and municipal speakers' forums suddenly canceled my scheduled speeches in droves. My bookings dropped from 60 paid speeches per year down to one or two. My speakers' bureau told me that floods of telephone calls from powerful members of the medical community had prompted the cancellations. They deluged the offices of presidents and board members of the colleges, businesses, and community groups that were hosting me, protesting my appearances. The callers were public health officials and leading doctors from local hospitals, university medical schools, and influential research centers in those locales. Using similar language, they offered dire warnings that I was anti-vaccine, anti-science, a baby killer, and that my appearance would jeopardize public health and vital funding to university medical school programs. The threat to interrupt money flows to the university PIs invariably trumps the traditions of speech and freedom revered in theory by university administrators. Starting in 2019, PIs at NYU attempted to force the ouster of popular historian and propaganda expert Professor Mark Crispin Miller from its faculty roster and law professor Mary Holland from its law school faculty because they dared question reigning vaccine orthodoxies. Terry Michaels summarized how Dr. Fauci exploited the strategic landscapes of the HIV pandemic to launch his career on a trajectory toward the unimaginable power that would allow him to dictate official orthodoxies, control the press, set international health policies, and even to shut down the global economy. Dr. Anthony Fauci seized an opportunity to create a multi-billion-dollar bureaucracy, distributing thousands of grants to seekers of federally funded research largesse, with a disproportionate to other diseases number going to HIV/AIDS researchers. Tony Fauci did not create the PI system, but his inexperience both as a scientist and as an administrator meant that he relied upon it and was at first at its mercy. Later, he took command of those troops and organized them into a powerful juggernaut that journalist John Lauritsen calls the medical-industrial complex. Please go to the Children's Health Defense website for the acknowledgments and notes by chapter, updates to data, and new information that becomes available on any of the subject matter covered in this audiobook.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.